Hi, everybody. My name is Christy, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi. I have shared my story here before, and if you've heard it, my apologies. It hasn't actually changed. But, this is, you got me again. I have to say that I'm really glad to be here. I am having a totally crappy day. I mean, lousy. Everything that has gone wrong could possibly gone wrong. And tomorrow and Tuesday aren't looking too great either. The good news is I do not have to eat over that. And in fact, every single one of us is abstinent for this hour. No matter what you were doing before you signed on to the meeting, no matter what will happen after the meeting is over, we are all abstinent for this 1 hour. And for me, that's a miracle. And any day that I'm abstinent is, to a certain point, a good day. Doesn't stop me from whining and complaining, but it is. It's a good day if I don't compulsively overeat. Let me qualify. I walked through the doors of OA in 1979. I have been abstinent since May 30th of 1980, continuously, and I'm maintaining a 100-pound weight loss. The AA Big Book says that our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. And so that's what I'm going to spend the rest of our time together doing, or rest of my time doing. What it used to be like. I did not know that there were other people like me in the world. Shame is my home base. That's where I live. And who knows what that comes from? It seems, I think, to have been factory installed. But I just didn't know. All I knew is that I was a chubby kid, a fat adolescent, a fat young woman, and I didn't know how to do anything differently. I understood that other people ate differently from me. I could see that, but I could no more figure out how to eat the way they ate than I could flap my arms and fly to the moon. I just could not get that. My mom says that I was born a chubby baby. I don't have a trauma history. I don't come from an alcoholic home or a home of addicts. I have my own opinions about whether either of my parents is perhaps a compulsive overeater. It's not for me to diagnose them. But I lived a privileged life. And so what was it that caused me to be a compulsive overeater? I speak only for myself when I say this, but I believe that I'm a compulsive overeater because I compulsively overeat. And I compulsively overeat because I'm a compulsive overeater. I think I arrived on the planet this way. My most vivid memories in childhood are of coming home from school, from elementary school, and sitting in the living room with a book, and whatever I had climbed up onto a stool, one of those really high stools in the kitchen, grabbed a pair of tongs and reached way into the back of the cabinet to grab whatever kind of refined carbohydrate it was. The pediatrician said to me, "Well, you're overweight. How about when you snack, you have an apple or some carrot sticks?" And I mean, I nodded because I was an agreeable kid, but are you kidding me? Don't be stupid. Nobody wants to eat that stuff, especially when there are other options in the house. So I was alone and eating a lot. I would go to my grandparents' house, and they had these special things that the cook would make, and I would take a stack of them and my book, and I would hole up in a bedroom, and I would read, and I would eat one of these after another. And, in Little Women, Joe eats apples. Yeah, they were not apples, I can promise you that. I do not have a diet history. I dieted once in, well, I dieted twice in my life before I came to program. When I was in high school, there was about 37 minutes when my height and my weight and everything all like got regulated all at the same time. And I actually have a photo of myself at that point, but It was because anorexia is simply the flip side of my disease. I had put myself on a very, very calorie restricted diet food plan. And that was how I got down to within what was a normal weight for my height. That was a summer that I was working as a lifeguard at the town reservoir. So I was biking there and biking home and counting, obsessively counting calories. I can still tell you how many calories there are in five black olives and in a packet of Sweet and Low. And I mean, I can still tell you all of that kind of stuff. It's just programmed in there somehow. So I'm obsessively counting calories. I'm weighing myself all the time. But as I was, I did not start at a normal weight, and I was rather overweight, and I was in my red, bright red and white striped tank suit and an International Signal orange t-shirt. That was the uniform for the lifeguards at the reservoir. And it was impossible to miss me. I was either up on the, you know, the Baywatch lifeguard stand, or what was most exciting is when I was on the International Signal orange surfboard. Out, it was a reservoir. It was just a way to keep us afloat. There was no surf. Out on the surfboard, looking in towards the shore, but there were snapping turtles in that reservoir. And so I had to kick my feet all the time that I was out there to keep the snappers away. You could not miss me. I went off to college and weighing a fairly reasonable weight. And there came a moment when I was in a relationship that I didn't know how to get out of. And so I did what any reasonable person would have done. I went to Europe and spent a year there. And while I was there, I picked up again. And I can remember, I mean, I basically binged my way across Europe. I can remember standing in line at a bakery and thinking to myself, Christy, neither your pocketbook nor your figure can afford what you are about to buy and eat. It was clear that I was going to buy and eat that stuff. There was no other option. I was, but I had this fantasy that maybe this time would be different. That's the fantasy of every addict. Maybe this time it will be different. So I gained back all of the weight that I had lost, and I was on the bonus plan, so I gained back even more. And after college, I was living in Berkeley, California. I'm not a Californian, but I, for a variety of reasons, that's where I and my then husband were living. And I finally decided, well, let me tell you what, let me move more into what happened. So my days consisted, I was teaching in those days, of getting up as late in the morning as I could, putting my makeup on in the car, flying down the freeway. I would have what I called a white breakfast. It was, you know, it was all those white diet foods, right? And the ones that have no taste, that, like, why would anybody in their right mind continue to eat them day after day? I would go in, I would teach, and I would leave school at the end of the day. It wasn't until I was some time into recovery that I understood that the other teachers, it was a private school, that the other teachers were staying to do lesson planning and socialization. And, you know, I had no idea they were doing this because I was laser focused on the fast food joints that I was going to stop at on the way home. Initially it was one, then it was two. And I always had to order enough for me and my friend, you know, back there in the car. And that meant that I had to get two giant diet sodas because, you know, one for me and one for my friend. And I would go home. This is before the days of remote controls for our televisions. And I would put everything on a tray and I would sit myself down on the sofa with all of my binge foods on the tray and the TV guide and the TV. And that's where I would be from about 3 o'clock or 3:30 until after Johnny Carson. Now, This dates me, I understand, but I can see some of you are of my generation. Johnny Carson was on, he was the Tonight Show, and he was on from 11:30 p.m. until 1 a.m. Eventually, I got smart. Instead of having to move from the sofa to the bed at 1 in the morning, I simply, at 3:30, rolled the TV down the hallway into the bedroom, set myself up with my binge foods in the bed, and stayed there until Johnny Carson was over. And then, you know, fell asleep with the crumbs and the stuff that I was squishing underneath me. The self-loathing, as you can imagine, was considerable. Again, shame is where I live. That's my home planet. And I hated myself so much that, and this is exactly what, it used to be called the doctor's opinion, the story in the big book. And it is now called, somebody is going to help me out on this one because I can't remember what it's called. Acceptance is the answer. Now, that Dr. Paul, I did exactly what he did, that I hated myself so much that I projected it out onto my husband at the time. You hate me, you hate me, you hate me. Until finally he said, well, okay, sure. I hated myself so much that I picked up a knife. I picked a fight with him, and then I picked up a knife and I stabbed him. It was in his arm. I did not kill him, but I refused then to take him to the emergency room because somebody might find out that I had done this. So he walked to the hospital emergency room. That was not what caused me to hit bottom. What caused me to hit bottom was that he called my therapist and he told her. And the humiliation and shame are, they were unspeakable. And she told me that if I thought that my sanity and my relaxation was to be found in those boxes and bags and in the refrigerator, that I was delusional and I would have to be locked up. And she told me about OA. Now, I was so excited by this idea that 6 weeks later, I raced right down to my first meeting. And this was a meeting, it was an Friday afternoon meeting, and there were seven of us in the room. There was one sponsor, and I did not like her. But I had told my therapist that I would, you know, get a sponsor, and I should say that by this time it was 1980. I had tried OA earlier. I would go to meetings, and I knew that the answer was here for me, and I was so unready. So I was still unready because I was objecting to the particular sponsor who was there, but I had promised my therapist I would get a sponsor. So I asked her to be my sponsor. She handed me her food plan. She had me call her every day to commit my food. And after 3 weeks, I had started going to some other meetings and hearing other sponsors talk. And I understood that I could switch sponsors. So I did that. I still work basically the same program now that I did then. I certainly work almost exactly the same food program now that I do then, that I did back then. Before I talk about what it's like now, let me say a little bit more about what happened. When I came into program, we really used AA's literature. There was no OA 12 and 12. There was no what I call the chocolate book, the one from which our invitation to you is taken. It's the brown book. There was no daily reader. We used a daily reader that is no longer conference approved. We didn't have our own literature. And early on in my recovery, they were working on a daily reader, but that actually came before our own 12 and 12, and certainly before the chocolate book. So we used AA's literature, and so that's what I was brought up on. That was the literature that got me into recovery, was the big book and the AA 12 and 12. Also Came to Believe and some AA literature, which is conference approved for OA. In those days, I would go to 3 meetings a week.
5 minutes.
Thank you, Melanie. I appreciate it. Let me turn then to talking about what it's like now. Because as I said, it's not too different now from what it used to be like. I'm so profoundly grateful that I don't ever have to go back to that. I am so profoundly grateful. So on a daily basis, I get up in the morning. And before I get out of bed, I say the serenity prayer. I take the first 3 steps. I say the third step prayer. I take step six and step seven. And I list the character defects that I have become entirely willing to have God remove from me. I list them in all their many forms, sneaky little things that they can be. And then I do 10 minutes of step 11 of mindfulness meditation. And I do a 10th step throughout each day. I do those on the spot inventories. It is my practice to give service when I am asked. I do weigh and measure. I weigh and measure a lot of things. I weigh and measure my food from a food plan that was handed to me by a nutritionist. It's very close to the food plan that I originally had. I don't eat sugar in any form, like no maple syrup, corn syrup, Worcestershire sauce, like none of that. I don't drink alcohol. I don't eat refined carbohydrates. These days, I'm here to tell you, nobody'd heard about not eating gluten back in 1980. These days, it's a lot easier to do that than it was. I'm also a vegetarian. I also don't do those artificial sweeteners like aspartame. Just for me personally, they give me an odd reaction. I weigh and measure every bite that goes into my mouth, except in restaurants. And if I'm going to eat in a restaurant, I commit ahead of time what I'm going to have there. In the old days, that required me going to the restaurant, asking to see a menu, and I kept a file of menus. Oh my goodness, now that we are all online, so much easier. So there's my food plan. There's what I do on a daily basis. As I said, I do 3 meals a day. I usually do three meetings a week, and I have 3 sponsees, and they are all over the world, I will tell you. I'm Australia, New Zealand, and New Jersey. Like, you know, foreign countries to me. My version, each morning, as I said, I say the third step prayer, but I have a version of the step 3 prayer that I can use when I'm in trouble. The big book says, it says this later on, we're going to get there in a few weeks. We pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for that intuitive thought. For me, that's the point at which my step 3 prayer kicks in, and it says, let's just assume that everything is going to be okay. I don't know what that's going to look like. And I have to tell you, over these last 6 months, there have been a lot of things that I am really not okay with. I have some changes in my family how they've played out, I am just not okay with. But let's just assume that everything will be okay. One of my character defects is acting on a sense of urgency. And so I ask to be removed from that, released from that every day. I've done a number of fourth step and fifth steps. My first fourth step was everybody else's fourth step, but now I try to, you know, keep the spotlight on me and stay on my side of the street. I mentioned 6 and 7. I've done 8 and 9. It's never too late. I have found to go back and do a 9th step when I suddenly remember somebody that I owe an amends to. I talked about 10, 11, and here I am doing 12. So before I stop my day at the end of the day, when I turn out my light, I find it very easy to go to sleep if I start to make a gratitude list. Now, if you have been around me for more than about 5 minutes, you know that I loathe being told to practice gratitude. I just don't like being told what to do. But I do find that when I make a gratitude list, that I am not only more grateful, but that I sleep much better. So I want to thank thank you, Melanie. I want to thank you so much for joining me today, for giving me the opportunity to give service. Thank you for helping me to stay abstinent, and thanks for letting me share.